in all the wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. But when they're running down our countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program. You're on ResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European Heartland. Well, first of all, some news from my new hometown of Hamilton. On about two Sundays ago, there was a clash at a gay pride festivity at a local park in Hamilton, and some preachers, conservative Christian preachers, came arrived. And as was their perfect right, they had some signs telling the assorted sexually weird to repent, that God loves them, but that they should repent. Now, you know, they're whining and caterwauling about, oh, how this disrupted, and this was so disrespectful. No, the LGBTQ crowd have the right to get together and celebrate whatever it is they're celebrating. But similarly, others have the right to attend and suggest that maybe they're wrong. You know, that's what free speech is about. Of course, these people are not used to being challenged. Well, there were some yellow vest people there and some others, and some of the freakish Antifa and some of the LGBTQ, of course, appropriately, with pink bandanas over their face, always hiding themselves. Fought, and there was some pushing and shoving. Anyway, what particularly interested me was this. The police so far arrested a person named Cedar Hopperton. If you, like me, are, when I first saw that word, are a little mystified. Now, what is cedar, like as in the tree, Hopperton? Well, okay, we continue in this report from the Hamilton Spectator. The 33-year-old LGBTQ and anarchist activist was arrested Saturday during a rally against hate groups at City Hall. Notice the lying editorializing of what Donald Trump quite rightfully calls the fake news. Hate groups. Well, had they ever been charged? Now, the group he's talking, the writer's talking about, or she, this is Nicole O'Reilly, the Yellow Vests. Now, they've never been charged with anything. That's just an evil label. Now, Hopperton, who identifies with the pronoun they, you might suggest, mentally kind of screwed up, right, is charged with violating parole for being at the demonstration. So that was a breach of a parole or undertaking. For being at a demonstration that's not peaceful. And then the report uses this freaks pronoun. They, no, it means Hopperton, which I take as male, is serving a sentence after pleading guilty last November to mischief over $5,000 and counseling to commit mischief in the Lock Street cell vandalism spree of March of 2018. Yeah, a group of anarchists trashed cars, broke windows, and caused a fair deal of damage. Now, the fact that this guy actually got a peace bond. Hopperton was called the ringleader behind the masked mob. Police now allege that Hopperton is one of the people wearing pink face masks seen in videos carrying a large black fabric screen to shield the gay pride attendees from a group of radical evangelical protesters who carried hateful homophobic signs. This is a news report. Now, they don't quote what the signs are, so the reader, an intelligent reader, might judge. No, you're being programmed to think, oh, bad Christians, good homosexuals. Hopperton's supporters at the Tower, an anarchist collective, posted a long message on Facebook denying that Hopperton was even at Pride. Well, being a messed up transgender like that, I'm not surprised. He meant the Pride, gay Pride parade, I guess, or gathering. Notice how they've stolen or appropriated the very good term Pride. Where Pride pride is always attached to something. You are proud of what? You know, I'm proud of my country, or I'm proud of my family, or I'm proud of my son, or I'm proud of my wife, or I'm proud of my girlfriend. Is pride of something? Well, okay, pride. Well, pride of what? Well, I gotta say, and it might be a tad vulgar, are you proud of where you stick something sexually? I mean, come on. It's one thing perhaps to do it. It's another thing to somehow revel in it as if you that's something you'd be proud of. But these people are simply not called often enough on their folly. Now, still with Hamilton, on Friday, the mayor of Hamilton was most upset to see a mob outside his house. Here's the report from the Toronto Sun. And it says that I ran against this guy last time around, and suddenly this report seems to have disappeared. I will try to I may have to try to summarize it for you. This is rather odd that it's disappeared from the Toronto Sun, but the story goes like this, that Hamilton Mayor Fred Eisenberger awoke to find about 30 pink-clad LGBTQ, you know, the crowd, outside his home residence, making a lot of noise. And their complaint seemed to be that the mayor and council hadn't done enough to support their cause. Hamilton mayor is angered by rude wake up from protesters at home. They are not all, but some of them with black face masks. So this shouldn't be allowed. And pink signs, which are effectively kind of blurred out. We're not quite sure what they're saying. The mayor of Hamilton got a rude early morning wake-up call Friday when more than 20 agitators noisily marched into his front lawn. The city's mayor, Fred Eisenberger, claimed the protesters were harassing not only him but also his family and neighbors by yelling profanities and banging at my door. The mayor spoke on Twitter to share images of the protesters holding and placing signs on his private property. Fred Eisenberger tweeted, "This morning my family and I were awakened, but never mind that, Mayor, to over 20 agitators at my home yelling profanities and leaving signs on my lawn and banging on my door. This is absolutely unacceptable," he writes. Yeah, I agree with him. "Harassment of my family and my neighbors or anyone is crossing the line. Police are investigating." Well, I hope they arrest some people. The signs plan to read, "Mayor doesn't care about queer people." Oh, why should he? Quote, "It's well past time for the mayor to wake up," read an anonymous post on North Shore Counter Info blog. Typical, of course, anonymous. "The queer community in Hamilton had their eyes wide open, and we aren't going to stop until Cedar," that's the transgender thingy, "is out of jail and all the charges against pride defenders are dropped." The protest may have been sparked by the jailing of transgender anarchist Cedar Hopperton, who was arrested in connection with violence at the Hamilton, whatever it was, gay pride celebration on June 15th. Kind of interesting. And still, with Hamilton, there was this comment by Margaret Schkimba, S-H-K-I-M-B-A, who is identified as a writer who lives in Hamilton. "We're all appalled, I hope, by the events at the recent gay pride celebration held in Gage Park, where yellow vest anti-immigration protesters and religious extremist groups gathered to protest revelers celebrating the hard-won freedoms of the LGBTQ community." Well, why would anybody be appalled? One side has one point of view, the other has a different point of view. As long as they don't fight, isn't that their right? That's what democracy is. And why should I be compelled to respect the quite frankly, sad type of people? It's sad. You know, these LGBTQ are, in some cases, I think, just mentally unbalanced, or sad, deranged. Well, perhaps not deranged. People, oh, but they proclaim their pride in something I think many of us find disgusting. Well, why shouldn't we have the same right to say, "Well, I think it's disgusting," as they would seem to have the right to parade in their illness? Anyway, that's not the way Mariana Schkimba says it. "I've seen the yellow vest protesting at City Hall on the odd Saturday that I've been down there. I view them as a fringe extremist group of the discontented and disgruntled, and I shake my head at their ignorance as I pass them by." How do they think their parents, grandparents, or great-great-grandparents got here, if not through immigration? Well, of course, this stupid woman doesn't get it. The yellow vests are not against immigration, per se. They're against the uncontrolled pouring in of illegals. That's what they're against, not all immigration. And she goes on to say, they are a remnant of antiquated thinking driven by fear, racism, and persecution complex as white, mostly men. She seems to know they're driven by, maybe we are driven by fear. Fear of our people being replaced. Racism, it's racism to not want your own people to be replaced or overwhelmed. Well, frankly, any creature that does not seek its own survival is, well, doomed to be dead. Which brings me to the religious protesters. What is wrong with you people? Jesus would be ashamed of you and your actions, spewing hate toward others, condemning differences, and outlawing love. What is outlawing love? And it's not by any means clear that what the LGBTQ types are doing is necessarily love. It might be lust, or it might be, well, some would think it's perversion. But this facile saying, accusation that the Christians are spewing hate. And she goes on a lot. What I found particularly difficult is free speech costs more than we think. Free speech is trotted out as a fallback excuse as to why these groups are allowed to congregate publicly. Allowed to congregate publicly? In what country are we talking about? Well, of course we have the right to freedom of assembly. It's part of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. We're not allowed. Free speech is not. It's not a fallback excuse. It's the raison d'être. The people have the right to gather, and to protest. They don't have the right to riot, of course, but they have the right to protest, no matter what their point of view is. As a writer, I have to be for free speech. Well, bully for you, Margaret. It's a no-brainer to me. We live in a world of ideas, freely exchanged, operating hopefully toward a common purpose of human advancement. But free speech is not a blanket excuse to say whatever hateful, hurtful, and untrue comments a person feels entitled to express. No. Sorry, Maggie. That's what free speech is. And who are you to say these what people might be saying is hateful, hurtful, and untrue? I think objectively what the Yellow Vest movement certainly is saying is absolutely true. Hurtful? Well, how is anyone responsible for what some snowflake may feel? Well, we're not. Hate speech is not free speech. You hear that a lot. Hate speech is not free speech. No, if hate speech is not free speech, then there is no free speech. That's right. Because hate speech is an empty accusation. What is hate speech? Who knows? Who knows? Well, hate speech is speech that the accuser hates. Words meant to divide and discount people are not free. What? Words meant to divide and discount people. All right. Smoking is bad. Bad for your health. You shouldn't smoke. In fact, you won't be allowed to smoke in here. I flew in Air Canada recently. I'm told I'm not even allowed to vape. Not that I vape, but what do you mean words that divide? Of course they're words like that, and they ought to be free. They cost the humanity of those they're directed toward and threaten the harmony of our communities. What about the freedom to express your views? Why should these, quite frankly, freakish LGBTQ people be allowed to parade in a park or gather in a park? I agree they should be allowed to. But why should I be prevented from saying, I don't like it? Oh, that's dividing the community. Well, maybe by parading their bizarre sexuality, they're dividing the community and offending people. These words are very costly indeed, and there's no place for them in a city that claims to be the best place to raise a child. We have a zero tolerance for violence in our public spaces. Yes, I would agree. And who's causing the violence at the Yellow Vest protests in Hamilton? The Antifa, who've repeatedly attacked them. We have a zero tolerance for violence in our public spaces. And hate speech is violence. Oh, I see. Speech is violence. Whether it's coming from anti-immigration advocates or religious zealots condemning homosexuality. We know these groups promote hate toward immigrants and LGBTQ plus individuals. Why are they allowed to congregate and protest when it's a threat to public safety? No. It's only a threat to public safety if somebody throws a punch. And when there has been violence, it's been the Antifa who've done that. This is the level of chop logic and reasoning that we're facing. Now, on Monday, Monday I went up to Ottawa to help Kevin Goudreau, who's a white rights activist. We were in court on Tuesday, I'm going to tell you about that now, and Monday night we had a meeting of free speech supporters in Ottawa. And this report was datelined on Tuesday, June 25th, harasser of white nationalist Kevin Goudreau turns snowflake and seeks a peace bond against his victim. Yeah, Jews have a word for it. In Yiddish, it's chutzpah, and it means unmitigated gall. That is, they often give the example of the person who is has murdered his parents, and then throws himself on the mercy of the court asking for a lenient sentence because he's now an orphan. 2 weeks ago, longtime white nationalist Kevin Goudreau was served by Peterborough police with a summons to appear in an Ottawa court on this past Tuesday. It turned out that anti-free speech whirlwind Richard Warman was seeking a peace bond against Mr. Goudreau. It seems Mr. Warman feared for his life. He wanted Mr. Goudreau enjoined from communicating with Mr. Warman and other directors named and unnamed of the Canadian Anti-Hate Network, of which Mr. Warman is the director. In addition, Mr. Goudreau was not to come within 200 yards of any events sponsored by the Canadian Anti-Hate Network. Now, how is he supposed to know what those events would be unless he's given advance notice? We don't know. And in fact, you know, supposing he was... There is an event in downtown Peterborough. He doesn't know it's occurring, but he walks by the auditorium where it's occurring. He's within, say, 200 yards of it. He could find himself in legal trouble. You see, if you violate a peace bond, the violation becomes a breach, and you can go to jail. Anyway, we haven't got there yet. It's the arguing, but you can see how overreaching Warman's demands are. And also he would have Kevin Goudreau give up any weapons he might have and not consume alcohol. What gives him the right to tell Mr. Goudreau what he can or cannot consume? Mr. Goudreau has never communicated, and this is the rather interesting thing, either by email, post, or phone call with Richard Warman. In fact, it wasn't until this past Tuesday morning in court that he had ever even seen him. So what's this thing, what does this B Warman has in his bonnet about Kevin Goudreau? Well, Warman is a chronic troublemaker and meddler and harasser of people whose views he doesn't like. Now he filed three affidavits in support of his demand for a peace bond. That's where it gets really interesting. The story gets more amazing. In an affidavit supporting his application for the peace bond, Warman revealed that he'd been contacting two different police forces, Durham Region, because Mr. Goudreau used to live in Ottawa, in Oshawa, which is in Durham Region, and Peterborough, where he now lives, four times since 2008, seeking to get Mr. Goudreau charged for his internet writings. Four times the police investigated and found no cause for charges. A very miffed Richard Warman concluded, quote, I have lost all faith in the police to lay criminal charges against Mr. Goodrow. Mr. Goodrow, of course, knew nothing of these machinations behind his back, which is perhaps why Warman's afraid now. Now that Goodrow knows, I'm so scared being an anti-racist activist, troublemaker, a person who harasses and goes after other people. The miracle is, CAD is such a mild country that nothing has actually happened to Richard Warman, who's ruined lives, incidentally. So for years, Mr. Warman has labored mightily to have Mr. Goodrow charged in jail. Now he pretends to fear the fellow he's tormented behind his back. In the glory days of Section 13 of the Canadian Human Rights Act, that was internet censorship, under which if postings on the internet, if they were likely to expose to hatred or contempt, that's only likely, no proof ever had to be given, showing that anything actually happened. Such posts, if they're likely to expose to hatred or contempt, privileged groups, you know, race, religion, sex, sexual orientation, and contempt, of course, is merely a negative opinion about something. So basically any criticism of these privileged groups, of course, truth was no defense. Intent was no defense. So in those glory days, Richard Warren filed over 30 complaints against groups and people. He boasts in his affidavit, quote, I've successfully brought 16 human rights complaints against online hate. Well, not necessarily hate, criticism of privileged groups, resulting in permanent cease and desist orders. Now, the reason between the explanation of the difference between 16 and 30, several of these got settled out of without a tribunal, but to always to the detriment of the victim, and in several cases, several complaints were wrapped up into one case. For instance, a complaint against an individual and an organization or website that they controlled. And in my report, I see many of the victims were fined, and two, Terry Tremaine and Thomas Winicky, ended up spending time in prison because of Mr. Warman's actions. More recently, in attacking anti-cultural Marxist satirical publication Your War News, Warman, who lives in Ottawa, contacted Child Protective Services in Toronto, according to testimony at a recent trial. That was the uttering threats charge by the two Kinsellas against Your War News editor, Dr. James Sears, and publisher Leroy St. Germain. And they were acquitted. Anyway, at that trial, the Kinsellas admitted that the people who called Child Protective Services trying to get Dr. Sears' child taken away from him was Richard Warman. Don't forget, he lives in Ottawa. To the best of our knowledge, I had no personal knowledge of how Dr. Sears treats his child. Doesn't live across the street. Doesn't peek through the keyhole. So, what knowledge does he have? I am amazed Child Protective Services took any note of him at all, because he's just basically a chronic old busybody. But they get me perhaps they're obligated to investigate. They investigated, and Dr. Sears and his wife passed with flying colors. Anti-racist attack dogs tend to be drama queens. During some of Warman instigated Section 13 hearings, there were as many as five government-paid security people to protect Richard Warman and the commissioner lawyer. Yeah, that was at the Melissa, sometimes there were fewer, but at the Melissa Gill hearing in Toronto, we counted five, including one female who accompanied the prosecutor, who was a female, to the washroom. And one or another of the male security people accompanied Richard Warman to the washroom. It must be tough for some people to earn a living. You have to accompany this character to the john. Now, that's five bodyguards, in addition to, at that particular hearing, outside security people who wanted people. They were the security company. So when you go in, you're wanted for weapons, I guess. Well, I laugh because there was some Somali woman who was one of these people, and she was nice enough. She didn't even know how to use the wand. She wanted me down. I didn't even bother to take the change out of my pocket. it was all a joke. And, of course, there were Metro Toronto Police around. And that's quite legitimate. If there's a fear of a breach of the peace or whatever, that's within their rights. But what we rankled at the idea of the government paying for five, let alone one, security guard. And I challenged that at the hearing. And I said, what is this for? At the hearing, there was little Melissa Gill, 5'2". She was the accused. She's the victim. Defending her was me, Paul Fromm, on the behalf of the Canadian Association for Free Expression. And defending the organization that she headed was Alexan Kalbashian. Now, Alexan would be in his 30s. Okay. So on one side, we have little Melissa, yours truly, who at that point was 58 or so, 60 maybe, and Alexa, who's in his 30s. At the back of the hall, we have two or three maybe elderly free speech supporters. On the other side of the hall, of the room, we have Richard Warman, the complainant, a woman who's the lawyer for the Canadian Human Rights Commission, and several briefcase toters. That's it. And up front is the member. No, I'm not talking dirty here. Let's call him judge. The member. That's what the law calls him. He's a member. I won't take that any further, but you can see where I might be going. Anyway, the member. Well, here then the five security guards. So I said, you know, this setup creates an apprehension of bias against my client, against Melissa Gill, because the optics are here are these five security guards. Where's the threat? They're not protecting us. They're hired by them to protect them. That's the Canadian Human Rights Commission lawyer and Richard Warman. And Warman, I'm sure, didn't pay for this, paid for by the government. In fact, we learned that in another case. It cost tens of thousands of dollars for the for these hearings for security guards. And I say that the optics are that here is this 5'2" woman, the victim, the defendant here, and these security guards are needed to protect the accusers? From whom? Whom? The two old people in the back of the room? The two people as acting as agents or representatives from Melissa Gill? Well, the optics are, yes, it must be the people on this side of the fence. Maybe one of the old folks in the back of the room who support free speech is some form of ninja. It's all ridiculous. But it's not just funny. There is in the optics the implication that we are dangerous. Well, it was dangerous for offering her opinions on mostly on race, and that's wrong. Eventually, the tribunal member or judge ordered the five out of the room. I said, I don't have a problem. Well, I have a problem as a taxpayer, but if they're out in the hall to make sure, you know, there isn't an attack by God knows what, the black shirts or something. Fair enough. But inside here, they shouldn't be present. Nonetheless, the Oriental bodyguard did remain, despite my objections. Anyway, in the argument for that, we got an insight into the mindset of the snowflakery of the anti-racists and the anti-free speech people. The prosecutor, a female, whose name temporarily slips my mind, got up and she said, but anti-racism is so dangerous. Fighting hate and fighting racism is so risky. We need this protection. And this is an act they frequently go into. This is what Richard Warren is now doing with the, I'm so scared of I'm scared for my safety because of Kevin Goodrow. Well, here's an idea. If you don't, if you didn't harass him, if you didn't try to get the police charge or try to charge him and put him in jail, maybe you wouldn't have any reason to fear. In fact, you didn't have any reason to fear because he didn't even know about it until you now revealed it. It reminds me of the juvenile delinquent, sadistic kid who, walking by a yard where there's a chain link fence and there's a dog on the other side, and he proceeds to take a stick and poke the dog and vex the dog. And then when the dog barks, the kid or his old man demand that the owner chain the dog. The dog's dangerous. No, the dog wasn't doing anything to you, to the kid, until the kid tormented him. Well, Warman is very much like that. So at this particular hearing, this is the one about 10 years ago, the lawyer for the Human Rights Commission was going on about how dangerous anti-racism work is, it's all an act. Well, it's all either all near mental illness paranoia or an act. I've never quite figured out which. Do you honestly believe this 5'2" woman and her middle-aged representative and two old free speech supporters in the back of the room are really a menace to your physical security? Frankly, lady, you're mentally ill. You're in the wrong profession. Maybe you should go home and live in a bubble or something. Was this for real? Or is this a bit of an act? We've got to show people that fighting racism and hate and this type of thing is so dangerous that we have to have all these bodyguards. Is it just an act? I've never figured it out exactly. But it's a pattern, whether it's an act or a pattern. Here's another interesting example, and it goes back a long way, but then it's so risky being anti-racist and anti-hate. Or maybe if it's all that risky, stop trying to take away other people's freedom of speech. But anyway, this is way, way, way back in 1994. And here's another professional racist, Warren Kinsella, and he's also a friend and buddy of Richard Warman. But Warren Kinsella had written a book, and it was a profoundly flawed book called Web of Hate Inside Canada's Far Right Network. And he was telling a Jewish group, according to the Toronto Star, his then wife and he would check into hotels under assumed names. For fear of hitmen that had been sent by Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. And that presumably was because of another book Warman had written in which he claimed there was a link between Canada's right wing and Gaddafi. And also, he was in danger of Libyan hitmen and neo-Nazi skinheads whom he'd smeared. Now, I always thought that that was just a story meant to impress the idiots. For one thing, even back then, that's 1994, credit cards were almost a requirement to check into any hotel. Now, unless he's particularly connected, how would he have a fake credit card? And would he be able to check in as Joe Smith, but his credit card says Warren Kinsella? I don't know. But anyway, the story never seemed to make much sense to me. However, I suppose it's good to build up the idea. I wrote this book about the far-right network. It's so scary. It's so dangerous. I'm in danger. I have to slink around like Agent 007 without a gun. or was it always just BS? I don't know. However, and I pointed this out when Kinsella pulled a similar snowflake act during the Your War News postal hearings. That was hearings looking into the fact that the minister in charge of the post office had removed Your War News' mailing rights. And I made the point there. That in the 20, nearly quarter of a century since 1994, nothing's ever happened to Warren Kinsella. So these neo-Nazi skinheads and Libyan hitmen must have been the most incompetent hitmen ever. Because, it's not that hard to find out where Warren Kinsella is. He goes to various TV, radio and TV studios and so on. I mean, if you're really trying to track him down, it wouldn't be a huge leap to be able to find out where he was. Or was this always just a crock? Well, I think it was. But one final example of the snowflakery. At these independent inquiry hearings into the minister of in charge of the post office, her act in taking away the mailing rights, there were a number of anti-racist, or what Dr. Sears calls crazy cat ladies, assorted leftists from the East End of Toronto and Warren Kinsella and so on. And they showed up at the first the organizational meeting for these hearings, and they were very, very afraid. They were, so they said. They said, well, they didn't want any of their personal contact information made public. Well, I of course challenged that. The normal procedures in these illegal proceedings like this is that the various parties exchange contact information. That would include your mailing address, your fax, your phone number, and email. That's just the way it's done, because there will have to be exchange of legal papers and submissions and so on. Well, they were afraid. There are neo-Nazis in the room. They're pointing on me. you'd have to be there to imagine just how ludicrous it was. Well, it was eventually agreed they'd only the information would only be by email. We would communicate to the staff of the independent inquiry, and they would then send any submission we might have by email to the various parties, but we wouldn't have one another's email. Email! Street address. Okay, well, I objected to that because this is just snowflakery. This is drama. Fine, but partway through the hearings, some submission or other was CC'd rather than BCC'd. Oh, Warren Kinsella flipped out, and several other of the snowflakes did. Oh, we're in danger. The neo-Nazis, by which the lying libel artists were saying, Dr. Sears or Mr. St. Germain, have our contact. We're in danger. What do you mean, danger? What's the worst that can happen? You get a nasty email. But of course, we'd be stupid to write nasty emails to these people, because we want the proceedings to turn out in our favor. But this is the degree of snowflakery. Anyway, Tuesday morning was a little anticlimactic. It was a rainy day, and obtained some legal advice from Mr. Goudreau. So I accompanied him to the court, and he sought to have his case moved to his hometown of Peterborough, which is normally where the application for the peace bond ought to be made. That was turned down. And although both sides were ready to go, that we exchanged what's called disclosure or necessary information, the court decided it would adjourn proceedings until August the 12th. So one of these big time wasters, and one of the reasons that the justice is both so expensive and disorganized in Canada. Well, this is Paul Thrama, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Going to take my musical break here, and going to take a trip down memory lane to a couple of singers, the Grand Ole Opry stars from the 1950s.
Excuse me.
Well, we're going to try.
All you folks are welcome, welcome as can be. Pull up a chair and set up a bell and join the jubilee.
Oh, it's the Grand Ole Opry, Grand Ole Opry, Grand Ole Opry.
From Nashville, Tennessee, the home of the Grand Ole Opry, American Artist presents Classic Country, featuring stars of the Grand Ole Opry.
Oh, have you ever been down to Haiti with Bruce Thomas? When the Cuban queen drops upon the scene, they'll stare like a statue made of stone. When they realize, but before their eyes, the other girls are left all alone. Down in the Caribbean, Senate, when you get a glimpse of a lady with the charm, and from miles away you can see this way to the beat of the Cuban conga line and horn. Up in a tree so high we've been.
Stop in two. One lonely hour.
always seems forever. 60 minutes more to wait for you. But I guess I'll keep waiting till you're with me. Cause I believe that loving you is right. But I don't care if the sun don't rise tomorrow. If I can't have you with me tonight, well, I know I'll keep on loving you, cause true love can't be killed. I ought to get you off of my mind, but I guess I never will. I could have a dozen others, but I know I'd love you still, cause I get so doggone lonely.
The Jordanaires, June Carter.
Fellas, that I know that you're going to enjoy. In fact, your cards and letters tell us that you always enjoy one of their fine songs on our little show here from the old barn down in Nashville, Tennessee. So without further ado, suppose we bring out the famous Jordanaires.
Saints go marching in,
the saints go marching in,
go marching in, oh Lord, I want, be in that number. When the saints go marching in,
we are traveling in the footsteps of those who've gone before, but we'll all be reunited on a new and sunlit shore. Now when the
saints go marching in,
saints go marching in, now when the saints go marching in,
go marching in,
oh Lord, I want to be in that number.
When the saints go marching in, when the
saints go marching
in,
saints go marching in,
the saints go marching in,
go marching in, oh Lord, I want, to be in that number.
When the saints go
of enjoying things. We have a young lady here that we call country music's own sweetheart. I know you're anxious to see her and meet her right now, so let's make her welcome my little pug-nosed friend, Miss June Carter.
Oh, hi, Judy. Glad to see you, honey.
Well, I'm glad to see you, too. I've got a fan letter.
Well, I'll do declare.
You didn't think I'd ever get one, did you, honey?
No, and I wouldn't say
but
that.
But let me tell you, I got one right here.
Is this a good one?
It's about the television program.
Would you read it for me, honey?
Yeah, it says, Dear Miss June Carter, by your own television, I can't pull my husband away. He just sits there by the set.
Well, that's real good, June. That's real nice.
I ain't done
What's that
yet.
Postscript?
He's afraid somebody will turn it on.
Oh!
It's fine, Mrs. Archibald Hammerslager. But let me tell you what, I read it, Ernest, and I went over and seen old Archibald Hammerslager.
You did?
Yes, sir, smart Eddie.
You told him all,
I told him, buddy, I did. I said, you little old smart Eddie, you. I said, I'll just give you 10 minutes to knock that chip off my shoulder.
Uh-huh.
Yes, sir,
and
indeed.
And what happened?
Well, 10 minutes went by, and that chip is still there, buddy.
Still there?
Yes,
well,
sir.
Well, I'll declare.
My shoulder was gone, but...
Oh.
Terrible time. Last night I had an awful dream, and it was terrible, Ernest. I'm
sure enough. Well,
about.
What was it, June?
Well, I tell you, there was this great big room, and in this room is just full of boys, good looking, boys, beautiful, handsome, lovely boys, thousands of them, and me. I was in there with them by myself.
Well,
I was terrible. It was awful.
Now, wait, well, June, honey, what's so terrible about being in a great big room just filled with handsome boys? I see nothing wrong with that.
Well, I was a boy, too.
Oh, what a dream. Honey, I think you better sing, don't you?
I will. I know one called Rain in here this morning, and he's nice. Been nice enough to sing.
Again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show will be at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All those are Eastern Standard Time. Back with you again tomorrow. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.